Well, if we look at page 54, we had finished up with Satan. I wish we'd really finished up with Satan, but he's still running around. And anyhow, page 54, and I've entitled this Diversity of Evil Spirits, Other Spirits. So I'm going to read a little bit of this and then I'm going to comment. Satan is distinguished from the spiritual agents through whom he carries out his mission. Think about that for a moment. In World War II, we fought Hitler. Is that right?
Right.
How many American soldiers went up personally and fought Hitler? Not a one that I know of. So we speak of that. We speak that way because Hitler had people under him carrying out his will. And we need to understand this. It's vital to understand that Satan is a creature created by God, not as evil, but as someone whom we saw over the past, not 2 weeks, but back when I was here last, created holy as all God's works are holy, but he rebelled against God. And so he has under him spirits. And this is important to understand, that there are spirits under Satan. So when I read, for example, the Puritans, whom I enjoy reading sometimes, especially years ago, and I read books like The Christian in Complete Armor by William Gurnall, which was a massive book on spiritual warfare, it's intriguing what that Puritan Episcopalian had to say about Satan's devices. Or if we read Bunyan's allegory, not the Pilgrim's Progress, but the War for Man's Soul, we see there the battle of the Christian. And what happens is that Satan carries out his work through other spirits. So Paul says in Ephesians 6:12, we wrestle against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. While there is only one devil, or Satan, the spirits described in verse 12 are all plural. They are rulers, authorities, powers of the darkness of this age, and the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Ephesians 6 establishes that even mature believers should expect that they will have to deal with these evil spiritual creatures, for no less a person than the Apostle Paul describes himself as engaged in a struggle, a word originally meaning wrestling. You ever feel like you're in a wrestling match? You ever feel like there's a target on your back? Do you ever feel like that if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong? Do you ever feel like your last name is Murphy? And that you wrote that law? Wrestling. And the great way, as William Gurnall writes, is that Satan, through his agents, is able to plant thoughts in our minds. I'll give you a tip. Remember again in the very early days that there's a natural world and there's a supernatural world. And both are realities. Both are realities. Why can I predict what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen. Get ready. Why can I predict that? I'm not going to propose natural law. I'm going to propose that there are natural phenomena that have patterns. And so we can predict with amazing certainty those keys are going to hit that table. And I'm going to say that probably 999 whatever to the nth degree, it's going to happen. But sometimes weird things happen in the world. So the world is a natural world, but it's also a supernatural world. And the Bible does not distinguish between the natural and the supernatural the way we do in a post, here's a big four-letter thing, post-Kantian world. And Immanuel Kant said that the world can be divided into the phenomenal, that's stuff that I can touch, smell, taste, hear, and the noumenal. And so Western people don't think biblically. Western people think in terms of dismissing the supernatural and trying to explain everything in terms of the natural. But if you really read the Bible without the spectacles of Western civilization for the past few hundred years, you begin to see that the Bible really doesn't distinguish these things, even though they are distinguished. It doesn't distinguish and say, oh, that's the devil, oh, that's an angel, or I didn't mean to point Mitch at you when I said that, but it's simply that as we go through life, both natural and supernatural are there, and we can't always tell what's what. In fact, I would submit to you, we probably can almost never tell what's what in that area. So notice what's described here as a wrestling match. We're in battle. Where do obsessive thoughts come? Well, we can do a lot of analysis there. And I remember when I studied Freud, sometimes can be pronounced fraud, but anyhow, I think he has much to offer, much insight into human development. And I'll just say that in addition to those insights that we gain, we have something else. Where do obsessive thoughts come? We could analyze, well, early childhood, this happened. Having a distant father, or this happened. Chemical imbalance, certainly that happens. Back in the 60s, I took physiological psychology and neurology, and you can look at all that and how the brain works. In addition to that, there's something supernatural. And I want you to know, God hears and answers prayer. He can heal your brain. And He can deliver you from obsessive temptations. He really can. And so that's not to say we shouldn't use doctors and modern science and take medicine. I take medicine. My wife takes medicine. But it's to say that there's more to the world and how our minds work than meets the eye. Now I'm going to throw another idea out. The brain is not the same as the mind. As I look at Scripture, the brain is like the hard drive of your computer. And the mind is like your soul. It's like the program. So when your brain begins to age, and being post 70, by the way, I'm older than Tommy Thompson. When your brain begins to age, your hard drive begins to deteriorate, and it's more difficult to run the programs. So your soul, which will never die, has to use that aging brain. So I just want to establish those things because I think it's important that we understand that we're dealing with a physical world and a supernatural world. So we wrestle. While there is no evidence that a true Christian can actually be possessed by an evil spirit, these spirits are able, nonetheless, to put thoughts into Christians' minds. If we really think about it, that's what happens. These enticing manipulations are described in Ephesians 6:16 as the flaming darts of the evil one. flaming darts. What happens in the ancient world when a flaming dart hits, or an arrow that's been soaked in some kind of flammable material is fired in the ancient world and it hits some wood? What's going to happen? It's going to burn things up. And so Satan's devices, again, through spirits, are very damaging. That's why, here's an interesting thought, temptation to sin is not the same as sin. But deciding to indulge in that temptation, even mentally, is a sin. Think about it this way. I hope you've not had this experience, but I know people who have. Back in the old days, you go to the video store, VCR, and you rent a VCR tape for your family. And somebody put the wrong tape in the box. And you bring it home for your kids. And you put it in there, and all of a sudden you go running up to the TV. And you turn it off, or what you do is you hit the eject button on the VCR, and it pops that tape out. And you go, and it's enough to make a preacher cuss. That was Daddy's favorite expression. But he wasn't a preacher. But anyhow, you go and you complain. What happens when you get the wrong tape in your VCR? And some of those are like envy. Some of those are like jealousy. Some of those are bitterness. Some of those are paranoid thoughts. Everybody has paranoid thoughts. That doesn't mean everybody's paranoid. Paranoid thoughts are like, people are looking at me. Well, when people begin to stare at me, the first thing I do is I do this. I pat myself on the belt, and I put a finger right here at the top of the zipper to make sure that my pants are zipped up. So that's a great thing about wearing a robe. So the point I'm making is that a lot of times people may not be staring, and sometimes they may be staring for a very good reason. But the point I want to make is everybody has little paranoid thoughts. Everybody has thoughts at times of depression. That doesn't mean that you are depressed in the sense of a clinical sense of being depression, but everybody gets down in the dumps. When my only sibling died in September of 1985, I stayed down for, I believe, 6 months. I couldn't watch certain movies without bursting into tears. That death affected me far more than the death of my father and mother later on. They died after my brother. So I'm saying that we deal with things, but the thing we've got to remember is that we need to punch the eject button on things that overwhelm us eventually, and particularly when it comes to temptations to hate people or to do immoral acts. You can't let the VCR tape play because those flaming darts will affect you. So we go on. As the entire book of Revelation makes clear, Satan and the evil spirits in league with him exercise some authority and control within this world, and their evil actions impact Christians. They are set in opposition to Christ and His church. Now, if you haven't heard, the man we've prayed and fasted for a long time was set free. And yesterday, he had a meeting with the president and other people. And by the way, there were Democratic leaders who were involved in that. So this was not a Republican event. This was an event of many people involved on both sides. I put that up. I stay off of politics on Facebook like I hope fleas will stay off of my former dog. I don't have animals anymore. Because it's a lose-lose situation. People can't talk to each other civilly anymore. So I put this up there. All right? And I have almost 3,000 Facebook friends. This morning, I checked it. And underneath, a friend of mine who stayed in my own home wrote, because here's the picture of Andrew Brunson kneeling and praying for the President of the United States. And he made the comment, excuse the language, unrepentant whore. So I hit question marks just as a reply. I know who he's referring to. I know he's not accusing Andrew Brunson of being that. This man is a real Christian. He just happens to live in Australia. And what I'm saying is that the level of hatred and division in not only the United States, but around the world is unbelievable. Where does that come from? And I'm saying that there is a manipulation going on that is not simply natural. Now, from my perspective, this allows me to believe in conspiracies without being a nut. And what I mean by being a nut is, you know, the Bilderberg, and I'm not saying they don't exist, but I'm just saying rather than trying to trace things out to this person or that person or this big money person or that big money person, and that may be true. The Bible is crystal clear that there is a conspiracy, and our ancient foe doth seek to work his woe. In his parable of the haunted house, bottom of page 54, the Lord Jesus teaches that there are different kinds of evil spirits. This is quite a passage. When the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest, but finds none. Then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when it comes, it finds the house empty, swept, and put in order. Then it goes and brings with it seven other spirits. Someone read the next two words loudly for me.
More evil.
More evil. Do you mean there's some spirits that are relatively nice and others that are...
More evil.
More evil? Well, yeah. You know, the great example of that is if you think about a religious spirit that keeps someone in bondage to something through all kinds of stuff, as over against Ted Bundy. I remember reading the interview that James Dobson did with Ted Bundy when Ted Bundy was in prison. And he was executed, I believe, in the state of Florida. Ted Bundy described it this way. He functioned in a normal way. And he said that at times something would happen to him and something would come over him. And then he became obsessed with doing what he eventually would do. He would stalk, he would kidnap, and he would brutally kill. And so, rightly so, he was executed. Whoso sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, as long as that's carried out in an equal way. And so anyhow, what's that? A spirit that gets a hold of a man like that, who was not a Christian, when he was doing those things, is a more evil spirit than the one that makes somebody have goosebumps when they go into a church that isn't a biblical church and makes them feel all warm and fuzzy. You know? So more evil than itself. And they enter and dwell there, and the last state of that person is worse than the first. And then he says, because this is a parable, but parables correspond to reality, so also it will be with this evil generation. He's referring to the people who were alive when he was teaching. While Matthew's and Luke's choice of the Greek word for other, heteros, as over against allos, implies another of a different kind, this word can be used for another of the same kind. These two Greek words are sometimes used interchangeably. However, Jesus is quite explicit, so I've already dealt with that. And now, because my doctoral dissertation dealt with Islam, nevertheless, midway in that paragraph, while one is tempted to roam off into speculation exactly as to how some evil spirits are better or worse than others, caution is called for, which I just threw to the wind. Nevertheless, the relative evil of some spirits is demonstrated in what they do to people, and nowhere is this better illustrated than in the life of Muhammad with all of his bloodthirsty rage and sexual depravity.
They're going to be gunning for you.
Well, I was warned when my paper was proofread. I was warned because I quoted the commentators in early Christianity, going back as far as the Venerable Bede, who lived a long time ago, through the Reformation and well into the 1800s, and I summed them all up because they believed that Revelation 9 was about Islam. And I summed them up as saying, in my original, before I revised it, that they saw Muhammad as a satanic figure from the pit of hell. And I was warned, said, you know, you shouldn't have this in here. And I said, well, why? Why shouldn't it? I said, well, because these things are public. Doctoral dissertations can be accessed by anybody. So anyhow, I thought, well, okay. All right. I value this a little too much. So I did take that out. But this was buried in there enough they didn't catch it. Jesus asked his father, going down to a scripture, about a little child who was demonized. And you know, by the way, we use the word demon-possessed in the King James Version and in other versions. The word is a verb form, and it's better translated demonized. Demonized rather than demon possessed. So anyhow, Jesus asked his father, referring to this little boy, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, and it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. Mark 9:21-22. Other spirits are gifted at deception and impose legalistic religious standards attempting to bring believers into, I'm looking at the clock so I don't want to get late, into bondage to man-made rules and regulations. I should have just read the whole thing and not commented. Now the Spirit expressly says that in later times some will depart from the faith. How? Now, since I've already left preaching and gone to meddling, why don't I just take the whole thing? I was raised in the Southern Presbyterian Church, baptized in it. My grandfather was a Southern Presbyterian minister. My uncles were Presbyterian elders, except for those that were in the Episcopal Church. I worked at Montreat in the summers of 1962 and 63. How did what happened in that church happen? Where does modernism come from? Where does unbelief come from? The Spirit expressly says that in later times, some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons, notice plural, that's not Satan, through the insincerity of liars whose consciences are seared, who forbid marriage and require abstinence from foods that God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. 1 Timothy 4, 1-3. Now what Paul's writing about is what would happen a short time after the apostles died. And by the time we come out after the Edict of Milan in 313 and Christianity becomes tolerated, there's a lot of weird stuff gets to be practiced. And we don't necessarily need to name, they've already been in the press so much lately, and the Archbishop in Washington, D.C., has resigned. Because they're things that you can't overcome nature unless you have a special gift. Now, God gives special gifts, but you can't command these things of people. You can't limit people's Christian freedom. And you read that and you realize where the roots of Roman Catholicism came from. I'm not saying this is a direct prophecy of Roman Catholicism, but I can say that when Sandy and I were in Russia this summer, we saw a lot of things very similarly. Not as severe as in Roman Catholicism, but it's there. So what I want us to understand is this. There's some relatively nice demons. And those are the religious ones. And then there are the kind like the Ted Bundy demons and some of the other serial killers, the one that killed Captain Crunch. Anyhow, that was a terrible joke. Did y'all get it? Yeah. Captain Crunch, the one that killed Captain Crunch, serial killer. Sorry. All right.
Yeah, that one did go over her head.
All right. 1 Timothy 4:1 mentions things taught by demons. You ever thought of it that way? One time, I had lunch with a young man who was raised in my church, and he had become an atheist. And so I set up this lunch appointment with him, and he was very happy to have lunch. And so we had a nice chit-chat together. And then I said, you wanted to ask me some questions. He had a notepad. And all of a sudden, he said, I cannot speak. Where did he say it? He wrote it. I cannot speak. What do you make of that? I wasn't pressuring him. I wasn't saying, I always like to make up names. Jethro, what in the world's wrong with you, boy? I didn't say that. It was a very casual conversation. What do you make of that? Where does atheism come from? This is my opinion dealing with atheists, having once professed to be an atheist. Atheism is not rooted in the intellect. Atheism is rooted in the will. And generally, it is rooted in a moral choice that a person knows better, and the conscience begins to be defiled, and rather than dealing with the conscience in a good way, the person hardens his heart, and as a result of the hardening of the heart, they begin to choose to be an atheist. And it's kind of like this. If you've ever raised children, and I think, I don't know whether your mama did that or not, Walter and Nathan, but at least some of your aunts and uncles did. There's the jam jar or the pie, and there are these fingerprints, little fingerprints. They're all there, and you confront. I'll say this about your Uncle Andrew. I remember one time we came out. It was Christmas time. We had the Christmas tree, and we saw that a string of stuff was off the tree and down on the floor, and we had a dog. And we come out to visit with him. We always would put the baby to bed first, let him take a little nap. We spent time with the other children, And then we would put them to bed and get the baby up. So we had Uncle Andrew up. He walked in and said, "What's this?" And he was just a little kid. He wasn't speaking in complete sentences, but he said, "Dog, dog, dog." So what I'm saying is that things are rooted in a decision to ignore evidence. So I'll wrap this up. First Timothy 4:1, bottom of page 55, mentions things taught by demons. In classical Greek, the word demon refers to a divine power, a divinity, and an inferior divine being, an evil spirit. The rabbis use this word in Deuteronomy, I give those citations, terming the pagan gods inferior divine beings, as for example, Deuteronomy 32:17. They sacrificed to demons, shade in Hebrew, Greek, daimonion, that were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded. And I'll stop there. Well, I'll read the last paragraph, because that'll get us through to the next title. The Bible uses the word spirit, both in Greek, pneuma, and in Hebrew, ruach, in connection with a variety of human evils and emotions. While such expressions are read with post-enlightenment eyes, remember Kant and other people, as simply describing human emotions and drives, it is doubtful that the original readers would have thought of them as mere human emotions. The Bible talks about spirits of jealousy, Numbers 5, 14 and 30. Spirits of whoredom, Hosea 4:12. In Mark 9:25, Jesus addressed a particular demon as, "You mute and deaf spirit." Blindness was caused by a particular spirit. Matthew 12:23 and Luke 13:11 speaks about crippling work of another spirit, a woman who had a disabling spirit for 18 years. So God willing, inshallah, we'll pick up Yahweh and the gods of the nations next week. Inshallah is Arabic for God willing. All right. Who will volunteer to close us with prayer and pray for me as I preach, do a children's sermon, and conduct your congregational meeting?